Fiat funds wars. Fiat funds murders. Fiat funds evil.
Bitcoin, in many senses, is inevitable. It's TikTok, next block. It's going to continue to work for you and continue to be a freedom tool that you can use without permission from anybody.
If we don't begin migrating to Bitcoin as a medium of exchange, we run the risk of it being this digital Fort Knox that, you know, the government holds and then BlackRock holds and then, you know, Michael Saylor holds.
You have to drop the dollar from your mind completely. Stop thinking about it as money. As extreme as that sounds, that is exactly what must happen.
Hey everyone, welcome to a special edition of Bitcoin Banter. As usual, I have Tony with me and we've got a special guest, Adam Semeca. Adam, thanks for joining us. You put out an awesome video. The topic of this conversation, or the topic we're going to discuss today, is really Bitcoin as money being used as currency, the importance, the significance. You put out an awesome video of you taking a walk, explaining why you think this is so important, why you think some of the I think the concerns or objections that people have really don't apply. Could you maybe kick us off by giving sort of your thesis on this, why you think it's so important? And then we're just going to take it from there and riff on why we think it's important as well.
Yeah, I could probably talk on this for days on end, but I'll give you the high
about
level.
5 minutes.
Yeah, the high level up on it real quick, and we can dive deeper on any of this if we need to. I've been more or less talking about using Bitcoin as a medium of exchange and advocating for it for a number of years. I think my first major, effort in this was I wrote an article, I think maybe 2 years ago. I wrote it on a Substack, and it was just titled Bitcoin is Spending. So I kind of spun off a little bit of the Bitcoin is Savings handle that was, you know, that's pretty popular on X, Twitter. And I just decided to kind of run with Bitcoin is Spending because I felt like it was an underappreciated aspect of Bitcoin at the time. It was becoming less appreciated over time as people got distracted by all these other things. And so the intent of that article was to essentially discredit or debunk some of the common myths around Bitcoin as its use of as a medium of exchange and, you know, a currency that people use to buy and sell things with. And so there, you know, there are essentially an endless number of reasons why somebody may want to not spend Bitcoin. And I just picked some of the top reasons and essentially just debunked them. And so that was my first kind of big effort there. And then over the course of time, using Bitcoin as money has always been really important to me. And so I've always tried to, find vendors that accept Bitcoin and give them my business instead of giving business to, you know, somebody that doesn't have any idea of, you know, the value proposition of Bitcoin. And so incorporating those things into my life. And that ultimately led me on this path of really seeing some challenges in doing that, some legitimate challenges, technological challenges in spending Bitcoin. And so then I eventually decided that I was going to I thought I was going to just be hard-headed enough to try to figure out these problems on my own. And so I built a Lightning wallet to try to help solve some of those problems. But so that's really kind of my passion. My focus is spending Bitcoin and allowing others to use Bitcoin as a currency to help promote the Bitcoin circular economy, because it's my belief that if we don't, then we're just essentially going to continue to rely on the fiat system, and we can never escape from central banking and fractional reserves. And the only way to do that is to use Bitcoin as a currency.
Tony, I feel like he teed you up pretty well, man. You're passionate about this as well. Why don't you respond to your thoughts, and then we can get into, I want to get into like why this is so important, because I have the same concern that you have, Adam, that I think, you didn't frame it this way. I'd be curious if you agree, and you can get to that after Tony responds, but that if we don't begin migrating to Bitcoin as a medium of exchange, we run the risk of it being this digital Fort Knox that, you know, the government holds, and then BlackRock holds, and then, you know, Michael Saylor holds, and then everyone else just kind of gets on board with this digital gold narrative, which is a useful analogy, but it's incomplete. And the money printer still is the rails upon which, you know, people transact. And so that's my concern. Tony, why don't you give your take, and then we'll kind of just bat it around for a little bit here.
What's the first line on the white paper? Bitcoin is electronic peer-to-peer electronic cash, right? It doesn't say electronic store of value. It says electronic cash. So it's money, it's currency, it's designed to be spent. The problem is there's too many quote-unquote influencers that have been pushing this store of value narrative more and more. Always hold on to your Bitcoin. It's a commodity. It's an asset to hoard and never, ever spend. Well, here's what they're not telling you, is that if Bitcoin is not used as money, there is no store of value. The only reason Bitcoin remains decentralized and secure is if it's used as money. And there's a simple explanation for this. Not everyone can use Bitcoin as a store of value. That is a privilege that is limited to a very small percentage of the global population. People in the United States, in the West, in Europe, you know, go buy Bitcoin and hold it. They think, you know, no big deal. Everybody can do this. And so they think of it as an investment in order to become either dollar rich or euro rich or whatever other worthless paper currency rich. That is the mindset. Like, they frame it in that sense. Owning Bitcoin as a store of value, a tiny percentage of the world can do it. Using it as money, 8 billion people can do this. And for it to have value, it must be the currency that is used in day-to-day life. Because otherwise, you risk having it centralized and co-opted. So those narratives that push that store of value are not being done in good faith, in my opinion. They are done either to sell a service or to keep you dependent on a corrupt and broken system, whereas the whole premise of Bitcoin was to destroy and replace it completely by sound money that no one can manipulate or corrupt. But people don't like change. They're stuck in their ways, either out of ignorance or fear or whatever excuse they come up with. Owning Bitcoin is literally reclaiming your freedom. You don't need to ask permission from anyone anymore to transact, irrespective of the amount. You don't care about the government. You don't care about the bank. You don't care about anyone. You want to send value to someone across the planet at any point in time, it'll take you 30 seconds. That's what Bitcoin provides to the world. It's a chance for you to reclaim what is rightfully yours. Your wealth, your time, your energy. And so as long as people keep thinking of it as an investment for dollars or other garbage currency, they remain stuck in that corrupt system. And in fact, they empower it, like they maintain its relevance, whereas they have a lot more to gain by doing what they can to ensure it fails and that Bitcoin emerges as the global standard, which I believe it will anyhow. It's just that the sooner people understand this, the sooner it happens. So to sum it up, you want the Bitcoin to the moon store of value? It must be used as money. There is no other way. You cannot pick and choose what parts of Bitcoin you prefer and let somebody else worry about the medium of exchange. In my opinion, the medium of exchange has to be the priority before the store of value and unit of account. And then you get the argument, yeah, but why should I spend my pristine asset when I can spend the garbage money? Because it doesn't work that way. To get your value, you have to use it as money so that the other system dies from irrelevancy. But as long as you keep feeding it because you're using it, That's never going to happen, or it's going to take a much longer time. So you spend your Bitcoin. If you still have that garbage fiat, buy more Bitcoin to replace what you've spent. That way, your stack is not affected if that's what's keeping you up at night. But when you do this, what you are contributing is to the acceleration of the adoption of Bitcoin in the real world. Like, you incentivize more merchants to start accepting it, which in turn, more people will see it as money. So they'll start using it. And you see like how the wheels start moving faster in that direction. And if you're fortunate enough to be holding layer one Bitcoin, well, then that's when you're going to get your to the moon Bitcoin purchasing power value. Without the decentralization and security of Bitcoin as money, that is not going to happen. So stop listening to whoever it may be, influencer or not, that is only pushing the store of value, commodity, asset to hold and never spend. That is a lie. It's complete bullshit. So money first, store of value second. That is the message every Bitcoiner absolutely must understand. Otherwise, we're headed in the wrong direction here.
Yeah. Adam, you're shaking your head, you're nodding along, you're smiling. Why don't you give your thoughts? Then I want to add a bit of nuance to what I think Tony said.
Yeah, I might have some nuance as well. I will start by saying I agree with so much of what Tony said, 100%. There may be a couple things that he said that I may agree with or I may not, just depending on, you know, the actual truth of the situation, which I don't think we all know, but it's about the message, right? So we see these people. I definitely would say that there are people that are have, you know, selfish or maybe even malicious intent in saying that, you know, Bitcoin is not a currency. I will say, though, I think the jury's still out on whether or not some of, we'll just say, the predominant voices in the space that have this mentality. You know, I used to be of the belief that they were absolutely bad actors and they were just trying to sell a product. I've recently started to come a little bit more into a realistic position and just more measured in my belief and how these people are presenting the message. And I think there is an argument, which I had previously dismissed, but I think there is an argument that it's more of a Trojan horse mentality, right? So I don't think that there's a 100% certainty that these people are just trying to sell a product and they truly believe this. I think there is still a case to be made that some of these prominent figures are truly trying to Trojan horse Bitcoin to co-opt the state. Now, again, I don't think we'll ever, you know, maybe in our entire lifetimes know what the truth to that is. But other than that, because that's still an unknown for me. But other than that, Tony, you're like my alter ego. I mean, you just said so many things that I resonate so well with. Speaking of, you know, one of the things you said, let's talk about this like idea of total addressable market, or, you know, the adoption of Bitcoin as kind of these two separate things. I think you and I would both agree that store value and medium exchange are, you know, really inextricably linked, right? I don't think you can have one without the other. But if, you know, you'll just entertain me for a moment and we're able to kind of separate these two ideas, a lot of people will say, well, you know, store value use case is growing so much faster than Bitcoin, or so much faster than medium exchange for Bitcoin. And I think that's a little bit misguided, because you're measuring two completely different things. You're comparing apples to oranges. And like you said, it's very dependent on geography as well. When we're talking about store of value, people are saying, oh, look at how many millions and billions of dollars are coming into Bitcoin, right? We're thinking in terms of fiat denominated value and measure. When we're talking about adoption in store or in medium of exchange, you know, currency, using it as money, you know, we're looking at people, the number of people that are using it. And in my experience, you know, it's in the United States, we tend to think in terms of, you know, our 401ks and retirement accounts and stocks and bonds and all these, you know, instruments for saving money into the future. And we have that mindset. But I've been, I've talked to people all over the world, and in other parts of the world, they don't have that mindset. just to give an example, and I talked about this a little bit in Las Vegas at the conference. I taught a course. It was just like a Bitcoin diploma course that was built on the my first Bitcoin diploma, free and open source program. And I taught this for some Eastern Africans in Tanzania. There were some Eastern Africans from all over the region, but it was primarily Tanzanians. And these people were not there for, you know, number go up in the same way that I talk to people on X that are from the United States. They are there because they want a currency that they can spend that the government can't mess with. That's it. They just want to be able to spend and receive in a currency that the government can't screw up, because these countries, you know, we'll call them developing countries. A lot of the reason why they have a lot of the struggles that they do is their central banks are so corrupt. And I'm not saying that they're any more or less corrupt than, you know, the central bank of the United States. They're just a much smaller scale, and they don't have as big of a stick to swing. And so their impact is a lot more detrimental on a short-term scale. But like I said, when we're talking about the number of people that are using Bitcoin as a currency versus the number of people that are just doing it to, you know, buy a Bitcoin denominated ETF or a stock, or even just buying it, even in holding it in cold storage with the intent to never use it, right? I feel like the second portion of that, those number of people, is much smaller than the people who just want to use it as a currency. And then the fact that it does essentially hold its value or potentially appreciate over time in terms of real goods and services, and it's able to combat, you know, inflation and money printing and quantitative easing from, you know, these central banks that control the currencies, that's kind of a byproduct. That's great. But that's essentially, you know, a byproduct of why they came to Bitcoin, a lot of the people in the world. So I think we're pretty unique in developed nations and how we see Bitcoin as a store of value, where the vast majority, in my experience, of people that are coming into Bitcoin are here to use it as a money in the circular economy outside of the central banking system.
No, you're absolutely right, man. You're absolutely right. And I agree with what you said earlier about the nuances that you brought up. But here, let me follow up based on this. I don't know if you know my story, you know, what led me to Bitcoin, but basically I woke up overnight and the banks had seized everybody's bank accounts in Lebanon. So I went to bed financially comfortable. I woke up the next morning homeless. Okay. So when you live through something like this, it casts a very clear spotlight on the reasons why something like this can happen. Okay. And it becomes like, without any shadow of a doubt, you understand that the fiat system, all of it, globally, internationally, doesn't matter what denomination, was a system created to steal. It wasn't created to provide any value at all to anyone. It's a system that created to steal, censor, and control. And depending on where you are on this planet, you would feel that on either a higher spectrum or a lower one. If you're living in the US, you wouldn't necessarily see the bad sides of that system because you're still living in a financially privileged situation, which is, in my opinion, right now working against the American people because they think, what's wrong? Nothing is wrong. Everything is fine here. But if you're on the other side of that spectrum and you are at the receiving end of wars, of genocides, of all the killings, of the hyperinflation, of the calamities that are 100% caused by that money printer, it won't take more than 3 seconds to convince you why you have to drop this system immediately and never ever look back. Prior to 2008, when Bitcoin was created, there was no other option, unfortunately. That is why we had these endless wars. That is why when anybody disagreed with US politics, somehow they would disappear, right? So we had to go through this. Until 2008, someone or a group of people decided, you know, enough with this nonsense, and they released that Trojan horse, Bitcoin, into the world. something we have never had before, and no one saw coming. And thankfully, people ignored in its first years. Because if governments were paying attention to it back then, like the same way they are now, they would have killed it immediately, for sure. But thankfully, they dismissed it, didn't understand it, they made fun of it, whatever the case may be, who cares? Right now, they can't get rid of it. They cannot stop it. They know it. We know it. They don't like it. So let's not kid ourselves into thinking that any government is going to willingly embrace Bitcoin. That's never going to happen. Bitcoin was created to replace them, all of them, collectively, you know, in their entirety. They will never willingly let go of that power. And the reason the store of value, commodity, never spend bullshit narratives are being pushed by them is because if 8 billion people in the next 2 minutes understand that Bitcoin is money and drop all fiat currencies, what do you think happens? Instantly. Now, some people don't want to see that happen because God knows what, you know, what that means. But how else are you going to replace a system by another? When the abusive team knows its enemy is here, they can't do anything about it. So the only solution they do have, the only play they have at this disposal, is to try to deceive 8 billion people into using their version of Bitcoin, which is store it in an ETF, put it in an exchange, keep it somewhere where we can control it. So you're using a government version of Bitcoin, which is the complete antithesis of why it was created. That is why Bitcoin in self-custody is the revolution, and which is why 8 billion people must learn these skills if they want a chance in hell to reclaim any form of their dignity and freedom. Any other play here is a losing bet. There is no other option other than learning these skills, opting out. You have to drop the dollar from your mind completely. Stop thinking about it as money. As extreme as that sounds, that is exactly what must happen. Because as long as you keep calculating your wealth in that shit, you are never going to be able to exit that system. And that system is going to continuously find ways to abuse you. And at some point, you're going to be at the receiving end of those extremities that many other folks in many different jurisdictions around the world have already experienced. That is why I push the medium of exchange narrative, because it's the only way you win in this revolution, that peaceful revolution, without firing a single bullet, without harming a single hair on any other human soul. You defund the evil that is causing the problems that the entire world is living through right now. There's no left and right. The problem is up. That is the source of all of these calamities. And the way you nuke it, the way you end it, is you just cut off its lifeline, which is that bloody money printer. So this is where the education needs to come in. This is where the effort needs to, like, never stop. Because as long as you trade convenience for doing what you're supposed to do, your life is going to remain fucked forever. And if you have kids, you are prepping them up for a world of hell, world of utter surveillance, control. They're going to be like goats stuck in a 2x2 farm. No room to think, no room to resonate, only obey. Tax cattle, useless human beings. That is the message I am hoping 8 billion people at some point will start making sense of, because there's no other way to come out and to improve our world other than adopting this mindset and opting out of everything that we've been lied to for decades on end. That's why I'm so passionate about this. And it irks me to no end when I hear someone telling me, oh, but it'll be worth more in the future. You are still counting in dollars. You have to stop doing this. You cannot. The two systems cannot coexist. If you're measuring your wealth in dollars, you're still losing. One is inflationary, designed to lose value forever, and the other appreciates in value, is deflationary. Like, you can't. It's like oil and water. Like, what are you trying to do here? Use it as money. Your purchasing power increases. Over time, you'll need to spend less and less and less of that Bitcoin. That's how you save it. So, well, we have to get there. You know, like, too many people are still hooked on that heroin fiat system, and they just can't seem to find a way to take it out of their veins. You know, like, this is why it's so difficult. But we have to do what we have to do. And as long as enough people break these chains, I'm very optimistic the rest will follow.
Yeah. Adam, I know you just met Tony, and we're so proud of him. He's finally not, he's over his shyness, and he's willing to say what he finally thinks now. It's Tony doesn't mince words, as you can tell. So let me give a little bit of nuance. What's that?
Bitcoin will do that to you.
Oh, yeah. And if you heard Tony's whole story, that would do it to you as well. So some nuance I'll provide. So first of all, you got me thinking, Adam. So you've got people in different jurisdictions, different cultures, different needs, financial needs that they have, which I think impacts how they view adoption of Bitcoin. I do sympathize, and Tony, you can rail on me if you want. I sympathize with the people in the United States who can send a Venmo payment and get what they need or whatever right now using dollars. And so they need Bitcoin's store of value to, like, understand the store of value use case before they're like, oh, I want to accept Bitcoin, right? Like, you have to, like, become a Bitcoiner if you're in a financially privileged society. Whereas if you're in, Africa in some desperate situation where the government's messing with you, you're not financially privileged. You just need currency that you can exchange back and forth, you know, exchange value, and no one's going to mess with it. So I understand sort of this narrative of, like, hey, store value into medium of exchange in certain contexts. But you bring up an interesting illustration that makes me think that's just because I'm coming from a US-based financially privileged background and I have that lens. So ultimately, I wouldn't have had, you know, you on, Adam, if I didn't broadly agree with everything you guys are saying. That said, I think there's nuances to how the adoption is going to take place in different places. The impetus is on us to push for that medium of exchange use case as soon as we can. One of the things I say is that how Bitcoin wins really depends on how we decide to use it. I think over a long enough time horizon, I don't know, 100 years, 200 years, I think Bitcoin wins as a medium of exchange. But in the meantime, we have Israel bombing Iran and the forever wars continuing and all the predictable mess that you see from fiat money. And so even though I talk about, like, hey, Bitcoin winning in the way I want isn't inevitable, I think it is over some really, really incredibly long time horizon. The question is, can we pull that time frame up to, like, the next 5 years, 10 years, you know, like, that's really the sense of urgency I have. I've got kids. Adam, you've got kids, right? Like, we want a better future for our kids when they're 10, 12, 20 years old, not I'm going to die. And then hopefully 70 years from now, when my kids are ending their life, like, we finally come around to this Bitcoin as a medium of exchange use case. So a lot of this has to do with, like, the timeline that we're trying to get to, not necessarily the inevitability. So that's maybe what I would say. I don't know, Adam, if you had any response to any of that or to Tony's comments.
I do. I think you teed this up really well. I want to kind of continue on what you said and kind of reframe it and how I see it. But I think you said it very well. I think, let me give you all a white pill, or in this case, a bright orange pill, because I think that there are two phases of Bitcoin liberation. The first phase, which I think solves 95% of the problem, is when we adopt Bitcoin ourselves. When we take Bitcoin into our own self-custody and we become self-sovereign through Bitcoin. And you mentioned this, you said the words, when Bitcoin wins, right? I have said in the past that Bitcoin doesn't win when it reaches X amount of dollars. Bitcoin wins when you can send a transaction to anyone in the world at any time without permission from anyone else. And guys, we can do that right now. Bitcoin won. In that case, in my definition, Bitcoin has already won. The second phase of Bitcoin liberation is when everyone else realizes the same thing. And I think that last part is just 5% of the equation for you as an individual. I think 95% of the problems that you can solve yourself happen when you opt out of the fiat system. Bitcoin, in many senses, is inevitable. It's TikTok, next block. It's going to continue to work for you and continue to be a freedom tool that you can use without permission from anybody. You don't need to ask anybody. You can take your own self-custody and you can opt out of that system entirely and live in your own Bitcoin world. Or as, let's see, Michael Saylor would say, Bitcoin is a shining city in cyberspace and you can go there. What does he say? You can go there. I'm blanking on the last part of the quote. But it's a shining city in cyberspace, right? You can go there when you essentially take your own keys, take custody of your own keys, and you use Bitcoin.
Now, or use Coinbase for your 500,000 Bitcoin stack. That's another option too.
Yeah, I would not recommend anybody keep their Bitcoin on Coinbase. That's make sure that's said.
Well said.
So you know, I think the last 5% though deserves a lot of our focus, especially as, you know, the three of us that are on this call and anybody, I'd say the majority of people that are going to be listening to this are already in the camp where they understand that first phase, which I see is like 95% of the battle is just figuring it out yourself. That last 5% though deserves a lot of our attention because that's where our hard work is going to come in. We have to actively work to solve this problem for other people too. And so it's not just as simple as buying and holding Bitcoin or buying an ETF and letting your, you know, number go up. It's a lot more than that because we need, there is also a chicken and the egg part to this too, because it's like, well, I'll start spending Bitcoin when more merchants accept it, or I'm going to start accepting Bitcoin for my business when more people demand to pay in it. We have to actually get out of that loop and step outside of our comfort zone and actually go do something about it. We have to go ask people to go accept our Bitcoin. If we're business owners, we should present Bitcoin as a viable, you know, option for payment. And if you're really, you know, an advocate, maybe you demand it. There are businesses out there that will only take Bitcoin for payment. That might be a little extreme in this state, but I think it's definitely something worth considering. By just completely opting out entirely from the fiat system. And that's going to accelerate things faster. So again, I think that's like kind of my white/orange pill on that, in that I think we already did win, depending on how you look at it. Most of the liberation can happen right now for anybody. And that's just by adopting Bitcoin yourself. And then the last 5% we can work on.
Yeah, I hear you, and that makes a lot of sense. I think the way I frame Bitcoin as winning is when the attack on Iran would have never happened because they know that they don't have the Bitcoin to continue to fund the war to the extent that they want to, right? And like I'm not making a political comment on Israel-Iran. The point is just like the forever wars, or for Russia, that, you know, they have to stop, or the Ukraine has to stop because they run out of Bitcoin and they simply can't fund sort of the senselessness of the wars that we see. That's always, I think war is like, for me, the best analogy, but it's also like the broken cultural incentives that we see. And, you know, there are literally 1,000 examples, like when buildings start becoming beautiful again, because people lower their time preference. And like when we're operating on a Bitcoin standard that restrains personal irresponsibility, and we in personal responsibility becomes re-incentivized in a way that we have not seen since in a long time, at least going back to 1971. You've seen all the charts. And so I hear you. Bitcoin has won in a technological way because we can send peer-to-peer transactions, right? But I think that Bitcoin winning in sort of a broader sense for me, like that last 5%, and more importantly, the implications that result from that last 5%, to me are way more important. And when this podcast comes out, I'll have just spoken about this in Prague. So like, this is my topic. This is what I'm very passionate about, because I don't want my son going shipped off to fight in some senseless war, right? You know, 15 years from now, like that's like, that would be Bitcoin failing, even if Tony and I and you, Adam, we're still running our nodes and, you know, people have, you know, are solo mining and doing all that fun stuff. And like the network still exists. And maybe even Bitcoin is worth a hell of a lot of dollars or purchasing power, more importantly. Because I think maybe where the one fundamental place where I think I'm still sorting this out, I think I disagree with the two of you, is that the store of value use case can't happen without medium of exchange. I think medium of exchange makes the store of value use case way better. Like, I mean, orders of magnitude better. But gold has not been used as a medium of exchange in any meaningful way for the last, you know, since the fiat paradigm began.
That's why it's failed.
No, well, I mean, but tell that to the people who have retained their purchasing power and can still buy the same house because they've been saving in gold. It failed for a lot of reasons as money, because they can just opt out. It's not trustless. Like there are a lot of reasons gold failed as a medium of exchange, but it's continued to retain purchasing power for people, at least in our current fiat terms, right?
Gold has been around for 5,000 years. You'd think in 5,000 years, it'll be worth more than $3,000, right? If it had any real store of value.
No, but I'm just saying, Tony, you know, if in the early 1900s, let's say, an ounce of gold can buy this small house. And today, that small house has gone way up in dollar value. And that same gold coin has also gone up in dollar value to maybe be able to purchase that house still. And so it has retained value by that measuring stick to purchase said house.
Right. It hasn't been able to stop the corruption that diluted its value. That's why I mean it failed.
Completely. That's kind of my point, actually, is that gold has continued to retain purchasing power, but it has done, because it is not the medium of exchange, it hasn't solved the forever wars problem, right?
It can't really be a medium of exchange. Like, how are you going to pay people with it? Like, when your thing to buy a cucumber, you're going to attach it to a pigeon to send it to someone in another city. Like, how are you going to use it? And it's not scarce.
I completely agree with you. The distinction I'm making, though, is that gold has served as a store of value.
Objectively. Yes.
In spite of the fact that it is not used as a medium of exchange. And so
point,
Bitcoin could continue to appreciate in value, store value, maybe even accumulate lots of value for people, even if merchants never, ever accepted it, because it can be used as like this reserve asset and it's absolutely scarce and like all these good properties it has. But I don't think that if it's just sitting in a digital Fort Knox, I don't think that solves the forever wars. And like, that's to me, Bitcoin winning. That's why we need medium of exchange. Like,
I'm not sure it's in any Fort Knox, by the way, but you know, that's a separate story.
separate issue. I don't know if the gold's actually there, and I don't know what governments have in terms of Bitcoin. My fear is to the point you guys have made, is if the commodity investment asset, digital capital, digital gold narrative is what people adopt, I think psychologically that tunes people out to leveraging it for the use case that will actually make the global impact that we are looking for. And so that's, I think there's some things I disagree with, like the maybe sort of the starting point of what you said, but I think we all agree that that's kind of the significance of Bitcoin as a medium of exchange. And Adam, I'll add, we operate at the Bitcoin way, and we're able to do this because we're a Bitcoin company. We are working with Bitcoiners, but we operate 100% on a Bitcoin standard. We only accept Bitcoin. We effectively won't work with you if you won't accept Bitcoin. I get paid in Bitcoin. Like, I mean, we're about as like golden, you know, in terms of like operating on Bitcoin standards you're going to find in any company. So, it's a cool thing. We're at 38 minutes here. So you guys want to leave any like parting comments? I don't want to take up too much of your day, Adam.
Yeah, I do want to say one thing.
Go. I'm good on time, but just wanted to make sure we're respectful of that.
This is hopefully a novel case to maybe try to bring these two ideas together. And we're talking about gold, right? Michael, your argument was, you know, gold has continued to maintain its value, its purchasing power over time, despite not being an effective medium of exchange. Now, I would say there might be a case to be made that gold has maintained its value, and I'd agree, not necessarily because it is an effective medium of exchange, but because it is a bearer asset. And the reason why I think this is important, and the reason why I think Tony is also right, is because I think there's also a case to be made that Bitcoin loses its ability, or the ability of it to be a bearer asset degrades as it becomes captured. Okay. So in that capturing process, looks like taking the medium of exchange aspect of Bitcoin out of it, and people stop self-custodying, people stop learning how to send transactions, people stop learning how to mine and run a node. At that point, Bitcoin is no longer a bearer asset, and now you just have a Bitcoin ETF or Bitcoin stock or whatever. And so in that case, you know, maybe Bitcoin can still retain its value and not be an effective medium of exchange, but we just completely eliminated the entire value of Bitcoin. And I say this, you know, I've said this many times, unless you can self-custody and spend Bitcoin, you cannot effectively defend yourself against a CBDC. Store of value alone in an ETF cannot protect us from CBDCs. Just can't. Sure. We have to be able to send and spend Bitcoin, or else we're at the mercy of central banks forever.
You're absolutely right. If it's not in self-custody, you have done absolutely nothing. You have won absolutely nothing. In fact, you have lost the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to take yourself out of this mess and regain your title as a free individual. So this is the narrative, the marketing that I hear from governments and all these things, is because they want to convince people to stay with the bad habits of preferring convenience over doing a little bit of work. If you hold a Bitcoin ETF, you're holding garbage. If you're buying a Bitcoin treasury, it's garbage. If you're keeping your Bitcoin on an exchange, it's garbage. It's not none of these are yours. None of these are your Bitcoin. Okay? Having access to something is not the same thing as owning it. Unless you are holding it in your 100% possession, you own the private keys and you secure them, you are holding hot air and have changed absolutely nothing in your life. And that is an extremely dangerous position to put yourself in, because you will always be enslaved to a system that has no good intentions towards you other than to keep extracting everything it can from you until the day you die. And then once you do, they'll go after your kids and then their kids, and that cycle of evil goes on. Fiat funds wars, fiat funds murders, fiat funds evil. The evil that rules you. Bitcoin is the only exit, the only chance in hell that you have of opting out of this system. And all you have to do is learn a few steps, easy steps, and then you become unconfiscatable. That's it. There's no other play here. So don't waste time listening to this guy or that guy. ETFs, institutions, treasuries, all of that is distraction, noise, complete garbage, worthless, zero. Buy your Bitcoin, own it in self-custody. That is how your life upgrades tremendously. And you can actually make the claim that you are now a sovereign individual. Beyond that, nothing has changed about your life.
I think that's a good place to wrap. Adam, thanks so much for joining, man. You want to give a handoff, tell people where they can find you. You got some cool projects you're working on, and would love to, you know, introduce the crowd to everything you're doing.
Yeah, sure. This week, I just announced that I joined the board of Bitcoin is Better. So it's a nonprofit, and we work on educating people in very much the same way you guys do. But we're, of course, a nonprofit, so it's all a labor of love for us. And that's a cool project. I'm really happy to be a part of that. The other thing that I'm working on is a self-custodial layer 2 Bitcoin wallet called Mana. And so if you're interested in spending Bitcoin in the circular economy, maybe check that out. Next week, I'm actually heading to Roswell, New Mexico. They adopted a Bitcoin strategic reserve for their city, and they're using Mana. And so I'm going to go down there and teach a lot of their local businesses. I'm going to be speaking to their Chamber of Commerce and some of their government officials on using Bitcoin, but with the focus of merchant adoption. So that'll be fun. By the time this comes out, I'll probably have already done that. I don't know if it's going to be recorded or not, but I believe there might be some media coverage.
Awesome. That is fantastic. It's those small steps. I mean, I've heard about the Roswell, New Mexico thing only for this reason. Other than that, I would have never heard of Roswell, New Mexico, but it's those steps that people take. It's one person, one business, one step at a time. So Adam, doing God's work, brother, keep it up. And thank you again for tuning in to everyone listening. Really appreciate it. Stick around for another minute and hear a little bit about the Bitcoin way. But gents, we'll see you next time.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers.
Take care.
Hey there, thank you for tuning into Bitcoin Banter. Wanted to take a quick minute to remind you to head on over to thebitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a free 30-minute consultation with a member of our team. It is critical that you take full control of your wealth and we can equip you with the skills needed to take 100% self-custody of your Bitcoin. For our existing clients, we also offer our Bitcoin Bootcamp, where we will conduct quarterly calls with you to reinforce the training we've provided and fill any gaps in your knowledge. While you're at it, ask about our solo mining service, something we think everybody should be doing. We also help with addressing your personal and online cybersecurity, and we can even help you set up a privacy phone free of big tech and Big Brother surveillance. Don't underestimate the amount of tracking taking place in your browser and in the apps you use every day. And finally, whether you're ready to make a move to a freedom-loving paradise or want a backup in the event of a worst-case scenario, be sure to ask about our Plan B residency program. Being untethered from a single location is one of the best ways to ensure your self-sovereignty into the future. Again, you can schedule a free consultation at thebitcoinway.com/podcast. If you are enjoying the show, please do me a favor, subscribe to our channel wherever you listen, give us a 5-star review, and drop us a comment. We would really appreciate it, and it makes it easier for others to begin finding us as we preach the gospel of financial self-sovereignty and beyond. Thank you again for listening. Until next time, stay safe. Stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.